Compounding, Alpha, Omega, Stock Split, Risk Appetite, Bull Market.
John, what are you doing?
I'm reading off investment terms.
But why are you doing it in that voice?
Because the first 2 minutes are critical to capture our listeners' and viewers' attention.
I'm sorry, folks. You're listening to Queer Money episode 490. Today, we're sharing the top 10 investing terms you should know that you maybe don't know.
All right, let's get on with the show.
You're listening to the Queer Money Podcast, personal finance with a rainbow twist.
Queer Money is dedicated to financial independence, financial well-being, investing knowledge, and the intersection of all things money as an LGBTQ person. Queer Money is made possible by Capital One. Capital One believes that financial well-being includes your mental, physical, and financial health. Check out CapitalOne.com today.
All right, folks, welcome back. You're going to have to bear with us.
We think we're being funny.
John did some he took a creative writing class about 700 years ago, and he's trying to put it to work now.
My mom and dad wanted to get their return on that investment.
Yeah, so we're going to be talking about some investing terms. You know, one of the things that we have learned from this podcast, from the surveys that we've done of the community, is that more of you want to learn more about investing. Many of you say that you're scared to invest, you're scared to work with a financial advisor. And so we want to try to ease some of those fears by providing you with a little bit of information so that when you do talk to an investment professional or you're reading information or you're listening to other episodes of the podcast, you kind of got a little bit more information or understand what we're talking about. And we're going to try to do this with a little bit of humor from my husband.
So I did not have wine while I was doing this. I was doing this when David was cooking me pancakes and bacon and eggs, which is why tomorrow I start a diet.
Yeah. All right. So again, 10 terms. We're not going to cover, you know, there are so many different things that you can learn. So we just want to give you a little bit in this particular episode. So let's start off with term number one. Asset allocation. Asset allocation is actually the strategy of spreading your investments, not your legs, your investments among different asset classes like stocks, bonds, and cash to balance out risk and return according to your financial goals and your risk tolerance. So here's an example of what this kind of means. Let's say, for example, your asset allocation is like choosing pizza toppings.
Because we're not having pizza for dinner tonight.
So you want to decide how many slices of pepperoni, we'll call those stocks, how many slices of mushroom, bonds, and cheese, cash, you want based on your taste preferences. It's about finding the right balance of flavors or investments to match your risk tolerance or what you're able to deal with and be able to go to bed at night without freaking out. Yeah. And it also aligns with your financial goals and your pizza profile.
Everybody has pizza profile.
Everybody does.
All right. Our second term is diversification. The textbook definition is diversification is spreading investments across different assets within the same asset class. For example, owning stocks in various industries or countries that helps reduce your risk. So the analogy that we're going to go with here is you're trying to pick who to go out with on a Friday night. If you only date men from one friend group, your experience will be very limited. But if you diversify and date men from various backgrounds, numerous men, many men.
Oh, you sound like, now you sound Blanche like Blanche.
If you want to date an artist man, an athlete man, a bookworm man, you'll have a much more well-rounded dating life.
Yeah.
You might be able to pick the most perfectest one.
The perfect.
So similarly, diversifying investments means spreading your money across different types of assets like stocks, bonds, and real estate. As dating different men exposes you to various personalities and interests, diversifying investments helps spread risk and maximize potential returns across different market conditions. It's about not putting all your eggs, no pun intended, in one basket. Or in this case, not putting all of your hopes on one type of investment. I put all of my hopes and dreams in this one right here.
Well, that's after you said yes. All right, term number three here, return on investment. Now, you may have heard this term before. Sometimes it's abbreviated as ROI. Again, the textbook version of this is a measure of the profitability of an investment calculated as the gain or loss from that investment compared to its original cost. So here's an example of what this kind of might mean. It's like evaluating whether the enjoyment and satisfaction you get from listening to Madonna's newest album justifies the money you spent buying it. I don't know. If the album brings you immense joy,
as it will, as they all do,
right? You've achieved a high return on investment, or in this case, return on happiness. Similarly, if an investment generates a significant return relative to your initial investment, it has a high return or a high ROI in financial terms. If the album sucks and you don't like it, it's a low ROI.
We will see if that ever happens.
There might be a few Madonna albums like that.
Stop it. She'll never come on our show. All right. Number four, we're going to go with market capitalization. The cool kids call it market cap, by the way. The textbook definition is the total value of a company's outstanding stock shares calculated by multiplying the current stock price by the total number of outstanding shares. Boring.
Yes, exactly.
All right. The gay definition is, imagine you having a pint of ice cream with various mix-ins inside of it, including chocolate chip cookie dough balls.
Ben and Jerry's.
Who doesn't love chocolate chip cookie dough Ben and Jerry's ice cream? The market capitalization is akin to evaluating the value of those cookie dough balls relative to the entire pint of ice cream. If the cookie dough balls is scattered throughout the pint, they represent a large portion of the total mix-ins, similar to a company with a large market capitalization. This indicates that the company is significant in size and value compared to others in the market.
Ben and Jerry's has a high value. That's why we love it.
Exactly. Right?
Compared to the 7-Eleven brand.
Conversely, if only a few cookie dough balls are in the pint, in that case, this represents a smaller portion of the total mix-ins, similar to a company with a smaller market capitalization. This suggests that the company is similar in size and value than others in the market.
Yeah. All right. Number five, asset class. Again, probably a term you maybe have heard, but this basically is a group of investments that exhibits a similar characteristics or behaves similarly in the marketplace. It oftentimes is a standard asset class like stocks, bonds, cash equivalents, real estate, and commodities. So an example of asset classes are like different brands of clothing in the mall. Yeah. Each offering distinct styles and price points. So
that's why there's more than one store in a mall.
Thank God. When was the last time we were at the mall?
I don't know.
So here's some examples of this. H&M, that is a brand that offers affordability, typically trendy fashion that appeals to budget-conscious shoppers. In investing terms, H&M could represent the equities asset class, which includes stocks to establish companies with moderate risk and potential for growth. So it's kind of something, a little bit of something for everybody, right? The Gap is another one. Known for its casual clothing and moderate price, it caters to a broad audience seeking quality and value. In investing terms, The Gap might represent something like the fixed income asset class, which includes bonds and debt securities offering steady income with relatively lower risk.
Basic.
Again, not super exciting, but people need it. And the third one, Louis Vuitton, a luxury fashion brand known for its high quality craftsmanship and prestigious status. Louis Vuitton caters to affluent consumers seeking exclusivity and luxury. In investing terms, Louis Vuitton could also represent alternative investments, asset classes that are typically not available to everyone. They oftentimes focus on high-end opportunities, things like hedge funds or private equity offerings that oftentimes give really good returns, but also they are very risky and have limited access.
And that limited accessibility is what makes it very prestigious.
Louis, yeah, I guess. Although it seems like it's becoming so
Basic.
common today.
Yeah, everybody has that bag. All right, our sixth term that we're going to cover here is risk tolerance, an investor's ability and willingness to endure fluctuations in the value of their investment. Investment goals, time horizon, and financial situations will all influence that. So we all have a risk tolerance, as David talked about earlier. There's, we have that risk profile. Some of us can tolerate more volatility, some of us can't tolerate as much. And so it's up to us to figure out how much of that we can tolerate. And once we figure out Once we're able to measure that, we're able to more appropriately pick the investments or the investment profile that matches that pizza profile that matches what our risk tolerance can handle. In the market for a new ride, Capital One Auto Navigator makes car buying easier. Search for a car you love and pre-qualify for financing to see your real rate and monthly payment without impacting your credit score. Get started today. Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com/AutoNavigator for details. So let's talk about cars because cars are risky.
And John talking about cars,
I know.
this is going to be
I
an
should have
interesting
given you this one myself.
conversation.
So if you prioritize safety and reliability and prefer to play it safe on the road, you might opt for a Chevy Cavalier.
Do those even exist anymore?
But no, but this is the very first car that I had where my mom had it and I was allowed to borrow it. While it may not be the most exciting or luxurious, it was durable and affordable and reliable, even after I might have hit it against the pole.
Or drove it into a ditch. Which did you?
No, I backed into a, I was trying to, I was actually my first day of college, my sophomore year, and I backed into the, there was a pole, a parking pole. Like it was telling me not to park there. And there I was, there I was trying to park there.
All right. So your basic thing here, your lowest risk tolerance
The Chevy
is your
Cavalier.
Chevy
Well,
Cavalier.
on the other hand, if you're seeking performance and reliability, you might choose a Honda Accord, which was the car that my parents bought me after I crashed the Chevy Corsica, which is another car
Oh my goodness, you and cars. Thank
that
God I drive most
I
of the time.
It also is comfortable ride. It's solid performance and good safety features appeals to a broad range of people because it's dependable and practical, but not terribly exciting and not terribly risky.
Yeah.
Alternatively, if you're more adventurous and enjoy pushing the limits, as somebody else on this podcast, you might opt for an Audi SQ5. It's got a powerful engine, as I've enjoyed, advanced safety technology, which I've not paid attention to, and luxurious amenities, as the puppies love. And it offers an exhilarating driving experience for all involved, especially when I'm driving the car. It also comes with higher price tags, so that kind of sucks.
Unless you buy it at a discount from a friend.
And potential maintenance costs, making it a riskier choice for the average driver and those on this podcast.
All right, number seven is liquidity. And no, we're not talking about what's in your glass.
But the
Although
analogy is about
we,
that,
yeah,
so
we'll get to that. Liquidity is the degree in which your asset or security can quickly be bought or sold in the market without significantly affecting the price of that particular asset that you own. Cash is the most liquid asset, while real estate typically tends to be less liquid. I
continue
think that
less.
some other less liquid assets might be things like art or very unique items that people invest in.
So I was when I was in trades training for Charles Schwab, the definition was
Boo.
anything, so anytime you couldn't access within cash within 3 days. So typically, obviously you can access cash like immediately, but you can sell stock and that trade will settle within 3 days and you can access that. So that was considered liquid.
Right.
But beyond 3 days is where you start to call it illiquid. And then of course, obviously art would be probably the most illiquid of one of the most illiquid of things.
All right, let's get into our analogy here. Let's imagine you have prepared a delicious cocktail, but somehow it got left in the freezer for too long because you forgot about
It was put in the freezer because your heart wasn't open. And so it's frozen.
it. Oh, God. If the cocktail thaws out quickly, it's cheap.
It's cheap.
Doesn't have a lot of alcohol and it becomes drinkable within minutes. Oh no, it actually has a lot of alcohol in it and it's not cheap because it thaws out quickly. When it becomes drinkable in a few minutes, then it's said to have a high liquidity, right? If you can access the drink readily when you want it without much of a delay or much of a hassle,
You're
it's
happy.
liquid, right? Exactly. If the cocktail takes a long time to thaw out,
That's when it's
there's a
cheap.
lot of water in that bitch. If it requires hours or even days, it's like having low liquidity. Eventually, you'll still have access to the drink, but the delay may make it not even worth having anymore.
He moved on to the next cocktail.
Exactly.
Give me a less frozen.
You ran down to the CVS and bought a cheap bottle of wine.
MGD. Our eighth word that we're going to define here is expense ratio. Expense ratio is the annual fee charged by mutual funds and exchange traded funds and other investment vehicles to cover operating expenses and management fees. It expresses a percentage of the fund's average net asset and directly impacts the investment returns. So, for example, imagine you have a monthly budget and are carefully reviewing your expenses to ensure you're managing your money wisely. The expense ratio is similar to evaluating how much of your income is allocated towards covering your bills. Here's how that analogy would work. Breakdown. You've got two main parts. You've got your monthly income and you've got your monthly bills. The expense ratio is like assessing the percentage of your monthly income by paying your bills, calculated by dividing the total expenses of your investment fund by its total assets. So if a significant portion of your monthly income goes towards paying bills, it may impact your ability to save or invest in the future, which you don't want. Similarly, if a high percentage of an investment fund asset goes towards covering expenses, it may reduce your fund's overall returns and your net investment gains, is why advisors often suggest when you leave a company that you sell out your 401k from that company and you transfer that into traditional Roth IRA, because those institutional mutual funds that are within your 401k, really expensive. A lot of expense ratios, a lot of costs there. And you can transfer that to a traditional or a rollover IRA where you can go with exchange traded funds, index funds that are considerably cheaper in expense ratios.
All right. Term number 9. Price to earnings ratio, oftentimes called PE ratio, that is a valuation metric calculated by dividing the current market price of the stock by its earnings per share, or EPS. It provides insight into how much investors will pay for every dollar of the company's future earnings. All right. So an example of this is you're out to dinner at a restaurant, and when the bill arrives, you notice that it's quite high.
Somebody's already left dinner. Conveniently.
We've got friends like that. A PE ratio is similar to assessing whether or not the cost of the dinner is justified based on the amount or the quality of the food that you just enjoyed. And here's how that analogy works. You get your dinner bill. The total cost of the meal represents the price of the stock, or the price per share of the stock, right? The amount or the quality of the food you received symbolizes the company's earnings. So your PE ratio is like comparing the dinner bill price to the amount or quality of the food that you've just eaten. It's calculated by dividing the stock's price per share by its earnings per share. So suppose the dinner bill is relatively low compared to the amount of food you've just received. You probably just ate at Chipotle. In that case,
that sounds good too. Yeah. We're talking a lot about ice cream, pizza, alcohol, and Chipotle.
I guess we're hungry.
Maybe at dinner time.
Yeah. It suggests that you got a good deal, similar to a low PE ratio, indicating that the stock's price is relatively low compared to how much that company earns. This is a good indication that the stock may be undervalued, or that there is not a lot of drive to buy it in the market right now, which means you may want to buy it. Conversely, if the dinner bill is high compared to the amount of food that you received, you probably ate somewhere in LA and it might feel like you overpaid, similar to a high PE ratio, suggesting that the stock's price is high compared to its earnings. This could indicate that the stock is maybe overvalued, that too many people have bought it or are continuing to buy it, and you may want to hold off.
That sounds like Tesla. All right. Our 10th and final word that we're going to define here in a very gay way is beta. Beta is a measure of a stock's volatility relative to the overall market. A beta greater than 1 indicates higher volatility than the market in general, while a beta less than 1 indicates lower volatility than the market in general. So imagine you're a teenage girl or your average gay man eagerly attending a Taylor Swift concert, thrilled to be a part of the lively atmosphere. Her excitement level represents the performance of a particular stock. Now imagine the overall energy of the crowd as the stock market itself. Beta measures how closely her excitement or the stock market performance matches the overall energy of the crowd or the market overall. Here's how that breaks down. Taylor Swift concert. The concert represents the stock market in general, with the teenage girl's excitement reflecting the performance of a specific stock. Teenage girl or gay man's excitement level, this mirrors stock price fluctuations. If she's or he's jumping, screaming, and singing along to every song, their excitement level is high, indicating a stock with a high beta. If they're more reserved and not as easily influenced by the crowd's energy, their excitement level is low, representing a stock with a low beta. So
you
overall
probably
level,
should have gone to Beyonce's concert.
Queen Bey. Overall energy level of the crowd, this reflects the movement of the overall market. If the crowd is pumped up and enthusiastic, it suggests a bullish market with high activity. If the crowd is subdued or disengaged, this indicates a bearish market with low activity. Wah, wah.
All right. So we covered a lot of terms here. Are all of these the terms that you need to know? Of course not. We've only kind of just scratched the surface. But hopefully this was fun enough to pique your interest, to learn a little bit more about the things that investors are wanting to be knowledgeable about to be successful investors. We'll continue a little bit more after this message.
With no fees or minimums and no overdraft fees, banking with Capital One is the easiest decision in the history of decisions. That's banking reimagined. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com/bank for details. Capital One, N.A., member FDIC.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of the Queer Money Podcast. Make sure you get your Queer Money takeaway and the resources that we mentioned in this episode in this week's newsletter.
Then join us this Thursday when we cover the most affordable LGBTQ plus friendly city for single queer folks. Try to say that 3 times fast.
Yeah, exactly.
And then next Tuesday, join us when we talk with the renowned personal finance queen, Farnoosh Tarabi of the So Money Podcast, about closing the gender, sexual orientation, and gender identity wage gap by getting members of minority communities who work for multi-million and billion-dollar corporations to stop asking members of minority communities to work for free or for the good of said minority community. Not that this has ever happened. Thank you and have a great week.